Hello, friends, and welcome back to another episode of the Health After 30 podcast. I have Philip Pape on the show with me. Thank you so much for being here, Philip.
Happy to be here, Alana. Thanks for having me.
Well, you're absolutely welcome. I'm really looking forward to our conversation because Philip and I are in the same industry, let's so to say. We both work with nutrition. We both work with what I would call getting to your feel-good weight. But Philip, the way in which you work with your clients is, I mean, it's weight loss, it's strength, it's helping people kind of feel, I guess, their best version of themselves in self-mastery. So can you kind of just give us an introduction of what it is that you do and how it is that you help specifically women?
Yeah. And before we started recording, you said we should just go there and be my vulnerable raw self, right? So even when I hear the term weight loss, that's one of the parts of language that I work with clients on addressing, right? Because often my first question is, what are you trying to do? What is your goal? And weight loss comes up. And I think 99.9% of people listening probably don't want to lose weight. They probably want the result that weight loss might give them. More importantly, though, is improving their health, their body composition, their function in the world, being a role model for their kids, being, you know, sexy to their partner, you know, taking their shirt off on the beach. That was my vulnerability for many years, still is to some extent because it's so deep. And what I like to do is just unpackage all of that and combine the systems engineering data side of me with the psychological side of how do we get what we want, you know, in terms of having a happy sense of well-being about ourselves physically and mentally. So that's kind of the gist of it. And then we can dive in more deeply to what that means physiologically and process-wise and all of that.
Yeah. Thank you so much for saying that, actually, because even... Yes. I also, when I hear weight loss, and it's such a big industry as well, like the weight loss industry, it's plastered everywhere, but you're right. Like that's sometimes the catalyst of why people want to start doing something, but it's not the end goal, because if it was the end goal, you would kind of, you know, you can kind of cheat and do this to get there, but it's not sustainable. So I really like that you said that you follow a lot of the nutritional science. So does that mean you're following a lot of the data, the numbers, calorie in, calorie out? How do you work with women on their journey?
Yeah. So the answer is yes and, right? So yes, I want to start from a place of what does the evidence say reasonably? And by reasonably, I mean, you can easily cherry pick data. You can easily look at small studies on rodents or something like that and pull out a conclusion. And there are so many tribes today. We all want to belong, but sometimes it goes to an extreme where we have the low carb tribe and we have the blood sugar tribe and whatever it is. And at the end of the day, the best evidence you have is yourself, right? N equals one. So to me, evidence-based means science combined with anecdote, combined with coaching experience, combined with your own experience. And your own experience can only be determined when you experiment with, you know, A versus B. So if I do A, which is what I've been doing, perhaps always cutting calories my whole life, living in an underfed, low energy state, hormones being, you know, wreaking havoc on hormones. And now I try B and I change one variable, like I'm going to lift weights 3 days a week and progress over time. What is the difference? Now we want to measure that. That's where the data and the objective science-y engineering side comes in. But it's data on how you feel, how you look, how you perform, how your digestion is. So it's a nice combination of all of those things. And I don't want anyone to come away thinking that it's we're machines and it's just all about numbers.
Yeah. If it was calories in, calories out,
yeah,
there wouldn't be this huge industry and it wouldn't be such a struggle for so many people. I like because what you're actually doing is a very individualized approach. You're taking what people are already doing and almost fine tuning or tweaking. Is that right?
100%. In fact, I don't want to work with someone who is, I'll say, a total beginner in this space. In other words, I'd rather them listen to your podcast or my podcast and build some basic education with free resources just for a little bit to understand where this comes from and then reach out and let's start doing the basics, right? Let's lift, let's walk, let's whatever. But right from day one, we have to be tracking and measuring the right things. Mm. And sure, that might be blood sugar for one person, but that's more likely your calories and macros and how you lift and how your weight goes up or down over time and your digestion, your biofeedback, your sleep, your hunger, your libido, right? The list goes on.
Hmm.
You mentioned something about, you know, calories in, calories out. There was a YouTube commenter that said, well, weight gain isn't the cause of metabolic dysfunction. Metabolic dysfunction causes weight gain. I said, yes. Like, in other words, they are both correct. Like, we shouldn't assume that that you've got a problem that has to be fixed and therefore you lose weight, or you lose weight and therefore everything is fixed, right? It's so complex. Physiology is so complex, but we can really simplify it by starting with the big pillars, the big basics of what the evidence shows works for body composition, for health.
And when you talk about tracking blood sugar levels and metabolism and sleep, do you also use gadgets?
Yeah, it's a good question. Sometimes. So I'd rather start where you're at. So like, everybody has a body weight scale. Most people can get a food scale, and most people have a wearable, right? So tracking steps is pretty common for almost everybody. And yet I've worked with clients that don't even, they're like, no, I don't wear anything. I'm like, okay, interesting. We're going to have to do this a different way. Beyond that, Oura rings and biohacking and continuous glucose monitors, I love it all. I love it all. But I would put that in the smaller percentage of things that people need to care about after they care about the other stuff. So yeah, a lot. I've got clients that are so deep into this and they want to understand everything, but I don't want to overwhelm somebody at first with those. Like, oh, I haven't measured my weight in a long time because, you know, I'm afraid of, or I have an emotional attachment to it. So those are the things we start to address.
Yes. And so you just talked about emotional attachment, and I kind of wanted to bring that in with perhaps because you can measure all the things and you can fine tweak and do all these things. And I feel like this is what the internet is so great with. It can tell you all the tricks and tips and how to do things and what works. But if you have an emotional attachment to something, what kind of challenges does this bring up for a person who is trying to get this self-mastery in their body? How can that hold someone back?
If I just think about personal experience with clients today that I've recently started working with, I can name three or four on my hand, you know, who will outwardly say, hey, I don't want to gain any weight because you know how sensitive I am to weight. And I'm thinking, okay, that's interesting because this person is extremely lean. And I'm just giving you one example in my head, a guy who used to do bodybuilding. He's extremely lean, like shredded more than almost any client I've ever had, and is afraid about gaining weight. And he's asked me, what do I need to do? What do guys in your position do? And I say, well, they usually need to gain some weight, but that's kind of the band-aid level answer. The deeper answer is they need to start getting comfortable with the result of the process. Like taking one step, which might be fueling their body so that they can go to the gym and lift, and allowing you to eat more carbs than you ever ate before, and then reporting back to me the next day and say, how did that feel? And he says, wow, I ate that banana before I worked out and I never felt so great. I said, okay, let's lean into that. Let's lean into the non-scale or non-whatever victories that will prove to yourself that this is a process worth following and that it is a process that takes time and work.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of fear that's in there for someone, as you said, who's in this calorie deficit and, you know, has a certain way of doing things, scared of the outcome or consequences that might happen from doing certain things, but then following through with it. So it's almost like that, it's kind of giving that reward, would you say? Like, you know, like it's kind of tricking, not tricking, because you're getting that reward from it once you do it and you experience it. It's like, oh, this actually works. Like, this feels good. I feel good.
And then I want to keep doing it. Habit loops, right? Having the reward and motivating yourself intrinsically based on the outcome, not waiting for the motivation. Like so many of us want external validation, external motivation, but really I'm trying to get you to where you take the action first, the very small, accessible, simple action. You start to expand your comfort zone. You do things that are a little hard, but not too hard. And then you see what happens. And if it gets you the result you want, that's super motivating to keep going. Having said that, if you've ever mastered something, Alana, like an instrument or writing code or baking, whatever, it's probably taken you many years to get to the point where you are now. And there's been many setbacks along the way, many paths you've taken that have probably not been as fruitful, but still taught you something. And so I play saxophone and I will never be good enough, but I enjoy never being good enough and always getting better. Right. I didn't get to a point of mastery and say, okay, I'm done. It's like, you don't lose weight and say, I'm done. It's an ongoing process. So we've got to make that process so much fun and inspiring and motivating for us that the process itself is the goal.
And that you want to show up every day and do that.
Yes.
Because it doesn't end. Yeah. It never ends. Actually, that's the whole thing with this whole journey. Especially when it comes to health, right? It's until almost your last breath that, you know,
last breath.
yeah. And so let's talk about then health span versus lifespan. Because this, you know, life is getting longer. We are living longer. Medical system, healthcare, like we're just getting older. There's a whole generation. And, you know, we can't just kind of get to an old age and expect, like, now I'm sick, I'm going to die. As for example, like, we kind of get to an old age, maybe 70, 80, and we don't just drop. We might decline, right? We might get health conditions and then slowly decline. So we need to look not just at our lifespan, but at our health span. And yeah, perhaps you can tell us, and especially I want to go with women, because women, you know, we kind of have to go this through a transition first, perimenopause, menopause, before we have this end of life health span issue. Can you perhaps just like walk us through for women what we need to consider to make sure that we have a good health span?
Yeah, I love this topic because, like you pointed out, what is the point of living a long life if you're weak or in pain or you're relying on medications? And it does start for many of us in our 30s and 40s, just because the body starts to, I don't want to say break down, but we definitely are showing our age, right? The parts are getting older and our recoverability starts to decline. And then our hormones exacerbate that, especially for women. So for women, I'm sure you've talked about this a lot with the drop in progesterone and testosterone and estrogen, DHEA, all of it's connected, thyroid function, et cetera. We could either look at that as hopeless, as there's nothing I can do about it, as I'm going to keep gaining weight, or say, you know what, because I'm in perimenopause, I know this is the best time to start focusing on lifting weights, supporting my bone health, supporting my muscle mass and strength. And that also contributes to hormone health. Yes, there is diet. Yes, there's protein. Yes, there's consistency. But it does start with starting to use your body as if you're a bit younger again, with a little control and guidance. But right, like you're young till the day you're in your 80s, 90s, and like you said, your last breath, you can build muscle, you can be athletic, you can sprint, you can lift heavy things. Keep that belief system in your mind and let that drive your identity now going forward. So I don't want to sugarcoat it, because first of all, I'm a man, and I know sometimes there's skepticism about that. Secondly, the data does show that there is a bigger disadvantage for women. And I want to be truthful about that, in that the hormonal changes will accelerate muscle loss and fat gain if you don't do something about it. But then third, you can do something about it. And that's independent of HRT, which, as you know, can be a useful tool as well. And I have nothing against it. I'm just talking about lifestyle here. So I know we can talk about specifics. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's go into the specifics.
Okay.
Because yes, firstly, things that we can tweak. What are the top things that, as women going through perimenopause and menopause, what can we be tweaking? What's the main
things? So lifting weights is honestly the biggest. I'm going to put that as like the 80% factor. Like if you had a pie chart, it would take up 80% of the chart. And I say this all the time, because people will set up calls with me and they'll say, look, I just want to lose weight, or I want to lose fat, I want to fix my nutrition, but I'm not lifting. Or I ask, how are you lifting? And it's like, I'm doing YouTube workouts, you know, same dumbbells over the months, over the years, nothing really progresses. And I don't really like it. You know, that's usually the thing. Like, I don't really like going to the gym. Like, well, without the lifting, you can't get the stimulus on your body, the load on your skeletal system, so that your body responds and adapts. And that requires a hormonal change through testosterone and growth hormone and everything else, that then causes your whole body to say, look, I'm an athletic machine that needs to push against force in the environment. And therefore, everything I do needs to support that down to the cellular level. And that means burning more fat, having more insulin sensitivity, using more of the glucose and carbs that we consume, better use of our thyroid, like cortisol regulation, like all the things you get that are trigger words for women in the industry, right? Cortisol is a big one. Can, I don't want to say be completely fixed, but are significantly mitigated just by lifting weights, not necessarily quote unquote heavy, but heavy enough to drive strength and muscle mass adaptation.
Is using body weight, like for someone, I guess, who has never done any weights, a lot of the women I talk with as well, it's like, okay, like, you know, what do you do as a form of movement or exercise? And sometimes, you know, it's perhaps at ground zero, haven't done anything in a long time.
Sure.
Can your body be enough resistance to work with your body weight?
I would say you want to start where you're at, right? So if you've never lifted before, for sure, body weight, bands, light dumbbells are probably going to challenge your body, right, to grow. And by grow, I mean, you're giving your body a hormonal signal that I need to handle this weight or this resistance so that when you go to sleep and wake up 2 days later, your body's going to have slightly more capacity, slightly larger sarcomeres in your muscle cells, you know, slightly more neural adaptation between your brain and your muscles to lift just a little more. And so if you take that chain of thought a few weeks later or a few months later, depending on your age and your capability, eventually body weight will probably not be enough for most people unless you get really, really clever to the point where you probably, it's going to be very challenging to figure out how to use your body weight alone to challenge you. I know there's some calisthenics people out there that are geniuses at that stuff. For most women, it's going to be going from that to dumbbells to some combination of machines or barbells. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just got to progress over time and get heavier so you can keep challenging and growing.
Yeah. And that's the thing, challenging. I feel like the constant growth path is through that challenge.
I actually did a really good episode a few months ago or weeks ago called Strength versus Hypertrophy. And if anybody listens to that in my feed, it really goes into explaining the science behind this. But at a very high level, there's strength and there's muscle mass. So strength, which honestly a lot of women should probably care about first and foremost, is going to be placing at least 65% of your one rep max of load onto your body. And if you never lifted a barbell and I had you warm up to a barbell squat, Alana, and then try to do your maximum right now today, that's your one rep max. If I said, let's take 65% of that, you need to be above that threshold for a decent amount of volume a week to actually build strength. Now, what is strength? Strength is production of force, but it's also neuromuscular adaptation, meaning your body is now using the muscles you have more efficiently. And so you're able to produce more strength, even when you don't have more muscle yet. Once you get past the first 2 or 3 months of that, you can then go either direction. You can go more strength or more what they call hypertrophy, right? Muscle mass. And then you have a lot more flexibility in terms of the load, all the way down to like 35% of your max, which something like bands can achieve. And the key principle then is, are you training close enough to failure to get the mechanical tension needed? So even if you have one of those like rogue bands and you're doing a pull apart or, you know, some people use TRX machines as well, right? TRX suspension. As long as you're getting enough volume close to failure to give your body the stimulus, it will grow. But you're probably missing out on the strength benefits for women aging, which is helping your bone density increase, right? And putting load on your spine. That is also a very important part of strength training.
Yes, that's actually, when I think about perimenopause, that is probably the one thing that I think of, the bone density and getting that impact and carrying that weight for that as well. We have different approaches to get to the same end goal, but there is importance in everything that you're saying. Like that, I don't argue with that at all. Like I do understand the importance of weight and also like the weight bearing exercises, especially for women as well. So when we think about your little bag of tricks, so to say, or like your systems, your methods and how you do things. So the first thing you would do is get someone on weights. What would you do? Like what's the sequence of events that would happen after that?
Yeah. So combined with the weights is the rest of your lifestyle and your nutrition, right? So there's probably 7 different categories I look at. Lifting, movement, which is a whole can of worms itself, because we talk about walking versus cardio versus sprinting versus HIIT versus low intensity and all of that. I'm a big fan of getting enough walking, right? Like, you know, 10,000 steps, 8,000 to 12,000 steps a day. And then supplementing with strategic cardio is what I call it, like low impact, high recovery cardio, like sprinting, anabolic sprinting. Anyway, so that's movement. Then we have nutrition, which we'll get into because that's its own thing. And then we have sleep, stress, and I think supplementation is kind of the small, tiny extra piece in there. Because some people are just deficient and need supplementation. So we talk about nutrition then. Protein first, fiber first is where I like to start. And while I do have my clients track, they track their food, their calories and macros, they weigh, they measure. I do that because I like the highest amount of precision possible. And here's what ends up happening, Alana. Even if people are like, I don't want to track, I've done it before. It's like, when we start tracking, I don't want you to hit targets. I don't want you to even change your behavior. I just want you to track and tell me what you see. I just found out that I eat like 60 grams of protein versus the 120 or 150 I need. You know, those kinds of awareness is in and of itself almost enough for many people to start changing their behaviors. But then we do, after about 6 to 8 weeks for most people, we've stabilized their training, their nutrition, and some of these other lifestyle factors. And then we can start making the adjustments needed for the more aggressive goal, which for most people is fat loss. But for many of my clients now, it's actually building muscle or trying to recomp without gaining or losing weight.
Mm. Recomposition, when you say recomp.
Yeah, recomposition. Gaining muscle and losing fat at the same time.
Yeah, I really like this, like the food tracking. Again, it's something that I do completely different, but it does give that assertiveness, knowing what you're putting in your body and how much you're putting in your body. Because at some point you do need a certain amount in and out for something to be efficient, but to see it kind of written out, it brings that awareness and it almost has that light bulb. Oh, I didn't even know that that's how much I was or was not getting. And that in itself, like that activity in itself keeps them going. So with the food tracking, is it something that you then encourage to continue doing?
While they're working with me, for sure, just so we have the data. But I do want to get you to a place where you can eat more what some people call intuitively. And a lot of people, when they start tracking in this way, they will continue on their own. Like I personally track just because I enjoy doing it. I like the data and it's very efficient and easy the way I do it. So it doesn't, it takes 2 minutes a day. Mm. I don't want people to be dependent on, for example, meal plans or absolutely not on restriction. I mean, that's my big thing, is not cutting anything out just because a guru says that's the right thing for you. You won't know the right thing for you until you start to balance everything out, eat mostly nutritious whole foods, train and move like an athlete, and then see how it all works together. Yeah, maybe you don't tolerate carbs, but more likely than not, you're going to thrive on a little more carbs than you had in the past. And that's just one example. I don't want to give you a meal plan either. I want you to be the type of person who doesn't need meal plans. Like, you know how to create templates and combinations of foods that help with your blood sugar control and your insulin and your training and lifting and recovery and all the things.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree with that as well. You talked at the start when you talked about nutrition, you said, okay, first thing is protein and fiber. So that's focusing on perhaps what you can put into your diet rather than restricting, which is taking out of your diet. And then you loosely just touched on carbs. And I find carbs an interesting one because, the industry or whoever would kind of tell you that carbs are bad. The amount of people that I know that are scared of carbs, it's almost been indoctrinated in, but we know it's also an essential macronutrient. So what are your stances? What's your stance on carbs?
My stance is that for the vast majority of people, they can consume more carbs than a low carb person will tell you is possible with zero negative consequences and a lot of benefits, especially for women in peri and postmenopause, for even things that we don't talk about, like cortisol regulation for your hormones. It's effectively putting stress on your body when you're cutting something out like that so completely. So adding it in and understanding the benefits of carbohydrates and what we mean by a carb, we don't mean pizzas and donuts. We mean fruit and oats and rice and starches, potatoes, even legumes, which have carbs, and nuts have carbs, right? We're not talking about ultra processed foods, which, let's be honest, are not carbs. They're carbs, fats, and sugars smushed into an ultra palatable, highly delicious, modern marvel of food science. That's what they are. And can you eat those? Of course you can eat them. I'm not telling you what not to eat. We're adding in the things that you need. So carbs get conflated for multiple reasons. One is the hypotheses that suggest that consuming carbs has all these negative effects on fat oxidation, fat adaptation, and fat storage that are all either misunderstood or actually just not supported by the evidence, depending on what way you look at it. So anytime I make a video or podcast about carbs, and Alana, you can go on my YouTube channel and look at the one I just posted last week. It's got so many hater comments. All the tribes, all the zealots, and I say zealots, what I mean is people who think this is the way. Like, this is the way. And my message is, you may thrive on low carbs, but don't tell anyone that they have to eat low carb. That's the main message. How about this? Let's do an elimination diet if you're worried about it. And that could look like carnivore or could look like keto or whatever. Elimination diet. And then let's introduce things back in one at a time. Let's introduce white rice, which almost everybody can tolerate. And then see, what does your digestion do? What does your performance do? What is your sleep like? And then let's prove to yourself whether or not you can eat carbs.
Yeah. I like that approach because actually by doing that, they will, it's not to be pedantic about what you're eating, but they will see fast results. But that reintroduction also means that it ends up being sustainable because I don't find I don't find these highly restricted carb diets sustainable because once life gets stressful, you lose a job, you have a breakup, whatever it is, and you kind of just revert back to perhaps what you have always known and loved, then all of that work, so to say, is just kind of, it's not sustainable and ends up reverting to how you were before. So yes, I really like that. I like that approach as well. I can totally understand that. I don't want to say haters, but the people who live dogmatically in how they see nutrition would get offended by what you say. So what is your then take-home message to someone who is starting, just perhaps made the realization that, okay, things have to change. I know that I'm at the point where I am uncomfortable in my current situation and I want to make a change. What is your kind of take-home message for them?
So somebody is uncomfortable, and I guess what I would say is has what you've been doing working for you, right? Like, you have to reflect on that for yourself. And is the cost of change less than the cost of staying where you are? Right. And I know that's kind of a simplistic answer, and everybody's going to be different, right? Alana, everybody's going to be different. This isn't about discipline. This isn't about dieting. This is like fueling your existence as a human being for the rest of your life and making sure that you thrive. I mean, that's all it comes down to. So far be it for me to tell you what you should eat. That is not my goal. It's to help you discover how you thrive. And everyone's going to be different. Like, everyone is different. Some people choose to be vegan for philosophical or value-based reasons. Cool. Let's figure out how to thrive in that context and in the environment we live in, which we can't deny that there's a very insidious environment around us that's full of temptation. And there's lots of things we cannot control. There's policy we can't control. There's new drugs coming out we can't control. We can control some things, and that's what we need to focus on.
Yeah, wonderful. And you host a podcast, Wits and Weights. What's the wits?
It's so funny. I came up with that podcast title while watching my daughter's warm up for soccer years ago. Like, this is 2021. And I was just like going through a random set of alliteration ideas and came up with that. And I thought, this is great. Mindset, you know, mental health, however you want to use the wits part. It's like thinking and being thoughtful and being skeptical. And then, of course, the weights is obvious. It started as a training pod, like about strength training, and then it evolved into being a little more holistic with training and nutrition.
Yeah. I mean, you have to take a holistic approach. That's actually what we talked about similarly before, the mindset of it or the emotional aspect of it and how it can be so challenging in getting to your end goal. Would you like to share your thoughts on perhaps to what degree do your wits or does your mindset play into your overall transformation?
5%. I mean, if I had to put a number on it, because without that, like, all the information in the world and the methods, tools, process, systems aren't going to matter, right? And it's not just that. It's also a bi-directional thing. As you get physically more healthy and live like an athlete, you also get significantly more mental health. I mean, I talk to people who have to have surgery, and then they're very positive minded about this, and they love to train, and then they're told they can't lift a weight for 6 weeks. And you even see a little bit of mental deterioration in that moment just because they can't lift weights. That's kind of where it comes from. Also, we talked about the emotional and the psychological side of it. The vast majority of these strategies for dieting, like taking diet breaks or gaining this quickly or not, or eating this much protein, whatever, they actually all come down to, you used the word yourself, sustainability, adherence. And that is all tied to our psychology. It really is. It's like the physiology is just going to tell your brain something. Your brain's then the one that's going to do something about it. And when we look at weight loss, when we look at hormones, it all starts in the brain. Brain-related genetics are at the root of all of this. I mean, if you had to pick one root cause for obesity, it would be brain-related genes. You know, it wouldn't be eating too much. That's a downstream result. So long story to your question is yes, it's so important.
No, yeah, that was a really good answer. And yeah, we could probably go into the psychology of all of it. But yes, it's really good. And the food is never the problem. It's almost like the alcohol is never the problem or the drugs aren't the problem. Like, it's what's actually going on, and digging a bit deeper there. So awesome. So Wits and Weights is where we find you. This is Wits and Weights on Instagram. This is witsandweights.com. This is Wits and Weights also on your podcast as well.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so wait, nice. Easy to find it. And you're going to be on there as well. So we're going to have a conversation that listeners who love Alana can get even more of you there.
Yeah, nice. Yes, we are. You also have a bunch of resources. So maybe just for the ease, I might put access to, because we talked about menopause and perimenopause today, I'll put one of your resources into the show notes as well. So people can kind of go straight there and find out what you're about.
100%. I'm sure I have a good episode about it or two. And then as well, I have a strength training for hormone health free resource that could be helpful.
Yeah, beautiful. Philip, thank you so much for being here and sharing with everything today. Thanks so much for being here. You could have been listening to anything, but you're here interested in reclaiming your health. I hope you found the episode useful and constructive. If you enjoyed it and would like to show support for the show, please leave a review, as this makes my content more discoverable for other people to enjoy and learn from. Please also consider subscribing to the show on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you enjoy listening. Finally, the best way to show support for the show is by sharing it with someone who you think might benefit from it. Thanks for listening. Be well, and I'll catch you next time.